Blog Talk Radio.
Drummer boy thing going on right there. And I just want to say welcome to the show, to all our friends around the world. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today and being part of Solar Records Radio on Health Talk today as we talk about autism today. And we have a very special guest on today, so we're going to have a great time. I'm going to bring my wife, Dr. Gayla Massey, on first. And Gayla, are you there?
Yes, I am, honey.
Okay.
Hello. It's nice to be here on the radio this very beautiful Christmas season.
Yes, it is. It's so nice. So, listen, why don't you tell a little bit about, introduce our guest. Just tell a little bit about our guest and introduce her, please.
Hi there, everyone. We are so fortunate and proud to have a wonderful guest on our show who has a whole range of abilities in terms of special education, and particularly in speech and language field. She also has her own private clinic, and she's been a speech and language assistant and then a speech and language specialist for 20 years. And it's very proud that I want to introduce Amanda Ludeke to our audience today. And we're excited that she's going to be answering some questions about communications and how in children on the autism spectrum, just, you know, the whole autism spectrum process. They are children that really have delays in communication. So with that, I know you have a question, Wardell.
Amanda, are you there?
I am here. Thank y'all for having me today. I'm super excited to be able to share some insight on some of my passion and maybe help shed some light for some families as they try to navigate this very interesting and sometimes very difficult situation.
I know, and you know, I'm so grateful that, you know, I know you got a lot going on, and it is kind of like we're in the holiday season, so thank you so much for taking this time to come on to the show for a bit here and just share about this amazing situation that I think that is so important for people to understand our children, what they go through, and not just the children, but the parents as well, this just dealing with you know, autism and the different parts of autism that really is something that whatever we can do to help these kids along would be a blessing for them and indirectly for us and their parents. So I'm just very appreciative and very thankful that you decided to come on and share this with our listeners around the world. And so, Amanda, I want to ask you first, in what ways is communication affected in a child with autism?
Well, and that's a really great question, because language delays affect a lot of different disabilities along the way. But I think the thing that we really have to remember as we're looking at early diagnosis, you know, as a parent, you sort of do have that intuition at 18 months, at 2 years, at 2.5, when something doesn't seem just right in general about your child based on, you know, they always say don't compare, but let's face it, that's why we sort of have developmental norms, so that we are kind of comparing and we have this idea. But what I would say is, if I was looking at my child and they weren't just quite talking at 18 months or 2 years of age or 2.5, that's not the biggest red flag for my child is on the spectrum. Those biggest red flags for my child is on the spectrum are that my child doesn't interact with me. Because there's lots of different reasons for not verbally communicating. And sometimes we get kids and parents show up and they're like, well, the doctor told me they think he's autistic. Well, there's pieces to that. Does your child do reciprocal play like peekaboo and patty cake? Do they seem interested in bringing stuff to you and pulling on you and trying to share and sticking with those moments? Two-year-olds, even 18-month-olds, do repetitive play, and it may be right next to that peer, that sibling, or that parent, but it's still super engaging. And I feel like those are the things we should be looking at. Is not so much is eye contact, that are you looking at me in my face, but are you watching what I'm doing? Are you engaged in what I'm doing? Do you copy what you see me do? Those are those beginning precursor skills. And for me, when I'm looking at those 18-month-olds, 2-year-olds, 3- and 4-year-olds coming into my facility, those are those bigger red flags than, oh, my child is just not talking. And I think we really need to be looking at those things. Can they engage and stay engaged? How well, how much are they willing to stay engaged, or how often do they just give up and walk away? Or they're tantruming because someone's in their space, and not just a typical two-year-old tantrum. I'm mad because I wanted it to be a certain way, but you're in my space and I just can't deal with you being there. Those are bigger red flags for a different concern, because when we look at language, we look at five different areas of language. And one is, how well does a child understand that receptive skill? And one is, how well do they express themselves? But the skill that is most lacking in kids on the spectrum is what we call pragmatic skills, social interaction. And there's a whole set of norms of what social development should look like. And if you're checking those boxes for, no, my kid isn't socially developing, those are bigger concerns.
Okay. Well, you know, I want to ask another question. That's because I don't want to get caught up in my emotion here. I'm not sure if you already answered this question, but how do I know when I should be concerned about my child's communications? How do I know?
So I think you kind of, the things that we want to be looking at are they making gains? And really, between 2 and 3 years of age, those are very pivotal years in terms of that language development. That 1 year is huge. And so much happens between birth and 3, that first 1,000 days of life. If you're super behind after that, it's really hard for us to catch you up. So what you should be looking for is if he or she is not talking by 2, doesn't have verbal speech, really likes to, you don't see pretend play happening. And what I mean by that is, like, a 2-year-old watches their parents like a hawk most of the time, and they are copying all of the things that they see their parents do. If a parent's cooking, you see that emulated and played out in their own play skills. So if you have a child who's really not developing that, they're not really using that verbal speech, those are times to be concerned. And what I would say is, use that parent intuition. You have it. And sort of kind of be a little bit more forceful with a doctor who's like, oh, let's take a wait and see approach. We really don't want to be waiting when you have a 2.5-year-old who has no words and isn't playing. And they're just carrying stuff around and they're just lining stuff up. That's not a time to wait. It's a time to do something, because there are other disabilities that are out there that mimic a lot of the things that we see in children on the spectrum. But if we wait too long, it's very hard for us to tease out, did they just need a good shove? Or, no, they're really on the spectrum and they should have had early intervention.
Oh, wow. Yeah, let me just ask you something. I'm just going to back up just a bit. What was it that caused you to go after this particular career?
Well, I feel like, and I don't know if I can say this or not, but God just set me up to have an amazing supervisor when I was coming out of grad school. Right before I went into grad school, I was working at a school district, and she had an immense passion for children with severe and profound special needs. And I fell in love with that genre in general. I spend a lot of my day with children that are nonverbal, and for a variety of different reasons. And I have a passion for assistive technology and problem solving and how to make their lives better so that we can see the gifts that they really have. I feel like I ended up there with a person who helped grow me. And she was actually one of the lead therapist for the state of Texas for the low incidence population back when I was, 20 years ago when I was going to school. And I just was super blessed to have her teach me and guide me, and I've just stuck with it. I love that population of children. They challenge me, but they also make me a way better person. I've met some amazing angels on this earth.
Amen. That's beautiful. And
Amanda,
and
can I intrude with a question?
Sure.
I too, this population, I absolutely love, and one of the reasons my whole doctoral thesis. But I wanted to see if you would clarify for our audience out there. They may not know what assistive technology is, and you mentioned assistive technology. Could you explain to them briefly what it is and how it works?
Yes.
And what you do in terms of assisting communication?
Good question.
Yes. So assistive technology in general is any device or apparatus that you would need in order to be a functional user of things. So a wheelchair, for example, a keyboard for those who can't write well, eye gaze, switches, and things that help us access our environment and our world. In the speech and language world, assistive technology comes in the form of augmentative and alternative communication, which happens to be a very huge passion of mine, because I just firmly believe that every child deserves a chance at some sort of voice. But that can be anything from a high-end communication device to picture exchange to low-tech communication. And so that actually would help a child who either is very difficult to understand. It seems like they're always talking in jargon or babbling, which is very much a comorbid diagnosis for our children with autism. And what I mean by that is not only may they be on the spectrum, but they might have apraxia of speech, which is it's a whole different show, but basically they have a really hard time motor planning speech sounds to produce intelligible speech. Or they may just be nonverbal in general, and verbal speech is just not something that they've developed. And so within our clinic itself, I would say a good 25% of our children use some form of augmentative and alternative communication as a form of communication. And that's not just limited to children with autism, but really a good portion of my children with cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, those are also things that they deal with as well. So that is, in a nutshell, kind of what it is.
Can you tell people about what a picture communication, what that looks like?
Yes, and so what I want to preface that with, there are specific programs that you must be trained in, like PECs. And then there are others that just use pictures. And what you basically do is you have a picture that, like, let's say you had a picture of a bag of chips and your child was nonverbal, and you had that, a bag of chips and a picture of cookies in your kitchen, maybe on a magnet on your refrigerator. And when you went to the refrigerator door, you said, which one do you want? And they would pick the chips and you would hand them chips. So you're using a picture to exchange as a form of words. And so that's what picture exchange looks like. There's a wide variety of what we call French vocabulary and core vocabulary. So French vocabulary would be your nouns and things that are situationally specific. And then core vocabulary are those action words that you use all of the time. They make up a good 80% of what we use. So pronouns and actions and prepositions, it's kind of your core vocabulary, and that would not be situationally specific. It makes up those words that we as verbal communicators use all the time. And so a good picture exchange system should contain both.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Thanks. Those are some great questions. Gayla, I want to just let you know that this is a Christian-based station, and so anytime you want to be grateful to God for what He's done for you, please feel free. Because we are grateful to God for you and your passion to help our children and be a blessing. And I hear your heart. And I feel you on, you know, the things that you're saying, and I'm just so grateful that God has blessed you with this heart and this determination to help our children to communicate and to understand others. And so with that being said, if my child doesn't communicate verbally, how do I communicate with them at home or at school?
So that's probably my favorite question, because what I want every parent to know is that from the moment your baby is born, your child is born, they are communicating. Verbal speech is nothing more, if we want to just take it back to its basics, it is nothing more than a socially acceptable form of communication, of behavior. Socially acceptable. We've said this is how we communicate. And so the truth is our children are telling us every day, all day, through behaviors, through pointing, through whatever they're doing, how they're feeling, what they're wanting. Sometimes it's hard to tease out, don't get me wrong, but they are always communicating with us. Our job, though, is to take what isn't acceptable, right? Biting, hitting, slapping, throwing, having a temper tantrum, that's all communicative. We can almost even guess when one is going to happen. So
exactly.
We sort of want to be in front of those things. And what we want to do is shape it, right? We want to say, hey, I don't like when you tell me no by slapping me. So when you hit me, I'm not going to really respond to that as being no, but I can teach you to take your hands and sign all done. I can give you a picture in front of you and help you point to stop. I can use a communication device and try to hand over hand that. But if I patiently stick with you, I can begin to shape that behavior into something that I like better. What we have to remember is that these are some key points that I hope all parents can take away. Children, whatever system you currently have, whether you like the system or not, it's what's working for that child. And children aren't like us adults where we're like, oh, we want it to be efficient. If it works, if it takes 20 minutes for it to work, but it works, I'm going to give it 20 and then probably plus another 10 just to make sure that that's not going to be effective. So if you have those behaviors that you don't particularly love that your child is doing to let you know that they're tired, that they don't like this, that they don't want this, or that they actually want you to come. I mean, I have a bazillion children who pull on me to get me to do something. It's not my preferred. I'd rather you tap me and point than pull on me. But if that's how I get your attention to get you where you're going, to change that behavior takes time. But it takes time and consistency of what you want it to be.
Okay.
And once the behavior is no longer effective, they'll start to move over into those other things. So just looking at your child and watching your child and then trying to be in front of it. Like, I'm going to give you something I know you don't like because I don't want you to throw it, but I want you to hand it back to me. So I'm going to be in front of that knowing that you're probably going to throw your cup at me. And I'm going to try to step in and be like, nope, you can put it on the table, because that's the behavior I want to replace. So we just want to shape them a little at a time. Pick one thing. Don't pick 20. You can't commit to 20. No parent can. But you can pick one at a time, and you'll be surprised at how they'll start to catch on to those little things.
Wow. That's great. And, I mean, you're giving so much amazing information that it's like, I need to, people get your pad, your pens and paper, and because this is a lot of information. But if you don't have your pad and the pen to write down this amazing information that she's given to us, then you could always come back and listen to the show again. And then, but this information is so good and it's so informational that you need to make sure that you have this. Because it really is going to be a blessing in your walk with children that may be suffering from the same situation. And so, man, thank you.
Go ahead.
Can I interject
one little thing? The other thing I want to say is, remember, this takes time. And what I like to help my parents understand is when you put your child in first grade, the second day of first grade, they don't know first grade. 9 months, right? That's how long it takes to learn first grade. Well, you're always going to have to step through normal development if you want to have a child who has a great foundation for communication. So if you have a six-year-old that's just learning to put words together, guess what? You're 4 years behind, and that's okay. Wherever you are is where you are. But the process isn't, the process doesn't just suddenly jump from, oh, we put words together, now we have first grade skills. No, we got to work through them. So sometimes as parents, we're super close and we don't see those little changes, the ones that are necessary. So don't quit. Don't give up. It takes time. It takes months. Sometimes it takes 10,000 times, and on 10,001, the light bulb clicks and amazing things happen. So get support and help, but you're going to have to, like, stick with it for some time. It's not an immediate fix. There isn't a magic wand here, but there isn't a magic wand to any child learning. Everything we do takes time to get better at it. So if you do it for a month and it doesn't seem like it's better, ask a friend. Hey, do you notice that it's a little better? Because sometimes we're too close.
We don't see
children,
the development.
You don't see them, right? You don't even know when they grow. You put them on a pair of pants, and they fit, and they fit, and all of a sudden they walk out one day, and they're 2 inches too short. And you're like, when did that happen?
Exactly.
Well, this is the same thing. It's the same thing.
Yes. That's awesome.
I'd like to interject something too, Amanda. Amanda, you were talking about how important it is to learn to shape behavior, and that all that takes time. Children often communicate through behavior when they don't have language.
That's right.
I'd like for you to, you're familiar with Carol Gray and social stories. Maybe you can share a little bit with the parents about where they can get information on how they can develop social stories themselves that are very pertinent to their own life, you know, life situation. Certainly, you can buy these stories that are general kind of things that all kids go through, you know, how to brush your teeth. But there's some that you really need to make pertinent to your own individual situation. Could you talk a little bit about, social stories?
Yeah. Absolutely. So I'm a personal generator of my own stuff, but technology is amazing right now. I mean, 20 years ago, it was way more complicated to make a social story, no doubt about it. But with our phones and our tablets, those things, you can make your own at home. If you want your child to do something a certain way, find a friend and have their kid and video that. Video what it looks like, right? We have so many kids who are running YouTube, and I'm not a big proponent of lots of tablet time. I'm not. I think that's one of the greatest devastations to this culture that we have, because we have a whole group of kids who are not even on the spectrum, who have no idea how to socially interact because they're stuck on a tablet. But it is a medium that those kids really do love. So you want to keep social stories positive. Not in a negative light, unless you have no other way to do that. So a great one, like, what do I do with my hands? Hands are not for hitting, but hands are for high fives. Hands are for hugs. Hands are for writing. You can create your own little picture story. You can get those things off the internet and images and put those together. I used to put them in PowerPoint and then print the little slides out with a picture and a simple sentence. You don't need a long sentence. You need like a four-word sentence, a max. Like, my hands write. My hands give high fives. And kind of something repetitive, right? And then the thing about a social story is, once again, not a magic fix. It's an everyday thing that you need to come back and revisit. If you can get a picture of your child doing that, that's even better, right? Because our kids love to look at themselves. So being able to catch them, see, look how well you are giving a high five. I like when your hands do that. So social stories are kind of twofold. One, if you have a child who has a really hard time with anxiety at the grocery store, let's say that. That seems to be one that's really big. you want to precursor your trip to the grocery store with your social story, and you kind of want to give the steps, right? When I go to the grocery store, I ride in the basket. And then something that's calming, like, I will be okay, right? We want to use these repetitive lines in there that help a kid have some understanding that they're going to be okay. They're going to be fine. So maybe every other page is, and I will be okay. Why? Because when you get to the grocery store and it starts to go south, you can be like, remember, you are going to be okay. We're going to ride in the basket and put the milk in the cart. We're going to ride in the basket and go down the bread aisle. We're, whatever you need it to say. And then when we're done, we're going to check out. If it's, you know, and I hear this one a lot, we can't go past the toy aisle. Okay, so you might want to preface one social story that says, and we're not getting a toy today. And we're not getting a toy today, like every other page is, I'm not getting a toy today. Why? Because that's kind of the point, is that you want them to be prepared for what's going to happen ahead of time. You've read it 5 times before you get to the grocery store. You might get in the grocery store parking lot, read it again. You might take the book in with you. And then if they do all that you wanted them to do, you want to be ready with lots of positive verbal praise. Or let's say that they really do love a specific cookie or something. Have that ready as you're coming out of the store, something that lets them know, something tangible. It doesn't have to be a toy. It doesn't have to be anything big, but something that helps them understand that we like that behavior. That's the behavior we're looking for. And then other social stories are specifically like how to control a behavior within a deal. So there's those social stories that are more step-by-step, this is what's going to happen. And then there are others with when I go to school, I'm to sit in my desk. When I go to school, I am to complete my paper. And you just keep those sentences super small. There's lots out there on the internet. Some right. programs that I think super highly of are Social Thinking by Michelle Garcia Winner out of California. And I find her stuff to be very good, especially for older children who are dealing with what I would call more higher functioning autism, more so than those who may have low, not necessarily lower functioning, but have a comorbid diagnosis of a learning disability or a cognitive delay with autism. I also like the Everyday Speech program. We use that a lot in our clinic. And then Bloom Learning Cards has an amazing set of stuff. So there's lots out there that I use. Those are just some personal ones that I've picked. Not that there aren't amazingly other great ones out there, but there's lots out there.
There is, and
I think that's really nice that people can know that the good thing about technology is it gives you a lot of sources of information that then you can utilize for yourself and your child. But as you said, these children are often highly visual, and they respond to that. At the same time, one of the biggest issues is children that become addicted to the technology, and they'll sit there and they won't even want to go to school. They want to be on it 24/7. And so it's very, very important that we need to utilize technology to help children, social stories, as you said, in any kind of behavior you're working on, any kind of social situation, going to a birthday party of one of your friends.
Right.
All of those you can really do with social stories, and it has really wonderful learning tools, too, whether it's even in subject area. However, it's so important that you monitor and that you do not allow your child to become addicted.
Well,
let me ask you this. I totally agree with that.
Let me thank you. Let me ask you this. If lots of autism children or autistic children play with toys, but focus on details about the toy, like a wheel or other details, what does that tell us about the child? What is it? That's the question from overseas.
Well, and so I think, so for me personally, what I think is that, what I personally believe is that those children find those things that make them feel calm or at peace, right? And I don't know that that's any different from the rest of us. It's just that we're able to let go and walk away. So those repetitive over and over and over things are those things that, oh, this is what I can focus on so I can stay regulated, right? And it may not look like what the rest of us are doing, but that's how they're regulating themselves. What we want to do, though, is help them branch out and understand that while they can have a love, they can't live inside the love. They have to move past. So a lot of our children, they have a box, right? And inside the box is safe and it's secure and it's okay. But that's not how the world works. So that child has amazing gifts. They didn't get here without no gifts at all. They have something that they should share with the world. And if we let them, they're going to be so in tune to the one thing that they'll never be able to share their gift. So we have to sort of do some hard love of, I'm going to push this envelope a little bit. Yes, you can have your thing, but you're also going to have your thing and do a little bit for me so that we can help it broaden their horizons. And what I like to tell parents is, guess what? Yes, there's a lot of fits and a lot of tantrums that go with that, but most of the time, they're not tantruming because they don't like it, because they don't even know they like it. They just aren't willing to try it. So we have to sort of help them try it. It's okay to eventually hate it. That part's fine. We all have things that we just do not like to do. But we also are able to move with the flow and be part of the world and interact. And if we let these kids stay inside their comfort zone all of the time, you'll eventually have someone who can't leave their box. And that has far greater repercussions than us taking a 2, a 3, and a 4-year-old and being like, you're going to be okay. This place is safe. I'm not going to hurt you, but you do have to move past this.
But
you can't stay over here under your blanket. You have to move past that point.
Do autistic children have a safe place with each other? Because I see in like movies and when I go around, when I was around my wife, and I would see her with autistic children, it seems like they get along with each other just fine. Is that the case or not?
So, and I don't really think that they're not what we would say antisocial. That's not a great term for them. There's just not this understanding of how that works, right? And so the thing is, it is a lack of perspective, right, of understanding that someone else is having different thought processes, is thinking different ways, doesn't see it that way. And so the problem becomes that they determine that they are predictable. I know what I'm thinking. So it's easier for me to stay with myself and by myself. And so I find that for the higher functioning autistic child who may actually be in the general education setting at school and seem a little quirky, but their learning skills are spot on. So that's not a hindrance to them. When they are around others who are on the spectrum, I feel like they're more forgiving of each other's shortcomings in the social world. More so than when you're with a group of people who are like, well, that's kind of strange and odd. Because the older a neurotypical child gets, they start to notice those moments, right, when you're like, well, that was just strange. Like, that's not what we would, like, we use these terms a lot, but that's not expected behavior. Whereas I feel like maybe the higher functioning AU child who's with those same types of peers, it doesn't seem to bother them. They're like, oh, that's cool. That's fine. Right?
We do
social skills groups for older kids, and I find that that's true. Amongst themselves, they seem to be able to have conversations and swap topics and not answer each other, and that's all fine.
Exactly. Like, so we're the problem.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, it's because sometimes we just can't get into their world. And I wonder, too, because you talked a little bit about perspective taking. There's difficulties in seeing others' perspectives. But also, could you talk a little bit about stereotypical behaviors that they might have. And also, so often you will see savants.
Yes.
People who, the high-functioning autistic child, they are savants in art and music.
Yes.
Playing the piano. Can you, you know, talk a little bit about stereotypical
behaviors and just real quickly,
how you see them developing?
Amanda, before you answer that,
yes,
that question, just real quickly, we have 4 minutes left, and because
I only asked
her to be here for 45 minutes, and she has a big day ahead of her, so I want to respect her time. So
you can
answer that in closing if you want.
Okay.
But I do have a closing question for you, but you can
do that. Well, let me see if I can wrap hers up, and then I'll answer yours, and then we'll be done.
Okay. Okay, great.
So, yeah, I think... So, amazingly enough, I think the God's gift to those children is that, yes, he has gifted them with some amazing, what I would love to call an exceptional skill, right? And there's really not any basis for why they can do that one thing. It's amazing. You can catch those kids as young as, you know, 2 years old. I'll have a parent come in and say, well, he can read. Well, there's no foundation for that skill, right? Because there's so many other things that he's not doing that he should be doing. But those are those exceptional things. And I think we just celebrate them. I find that at times when they are amazingly exceptional in one area, their ability to move past and talk about other things is really hard. And that's the part that really kind of draws that down, is that they're so hyper-focused on their interest. They can't include the rest of the world. And we don't really know how to be in their world, because most of the time what they're talking about, it's all they talk about, it's all they think about. And that becomes the hindrance as well as the gift. And I hope I answered that question well enough.
But we do see it.
We do see it. And I think those are amazing. I think that's where we'll someday find a cure for cancer, and those things are in those people with exceptional gifts like that.
Yes. Hey, thank you. Thank you so much. All right. And in closing, you know, after you answer this question, if you just want to say anything in closing, please, you know, do that. And then we appreciate you very much. So my last question for you is, can you tell me what you believe to be the most important thing to remember about helping my child communicate?
The most important thing to remember is they already are. You just have to step back. And sometimes we're tired and we're exhausted and we're so close to the situation. But what you have to remember is that they are communicating. And you have all that you need to help them. Because I just truly believe that there's not a parent out there that doesn't actually possess all that they need to help them. So trust your intuition. Look at them and celebrate them every day, because they're amazing. They have amazing things, and they're just struggling. But every child struggles. And there's going to be hard days, and there's going to be great days. So just watch, because they already are. And don't be afraid to question what is happening and why it's happening, because that's what allows you to get that knowledge. If you don't think you have an answer, search it out. But that child was entrusted to you, and you already have all that you need. You just have to celebrate them. They're yours. Help them grow.
Wow.
Help them fly. You possess it, and they will soar when you believe that they can. That's it.
And it's so important, I think, Amanda, is that we don't just sit back and wait. That the earlier that you get a diagnosis and then begin to get some help, it's so important in terms of their speed of recovery and development. Wow.
Yes, I totally believe that.
Thank you so much. I think I've come across someone that loves these kids just as much as I do.
They are amazing. And they will teach you so much. They will.
Yeah.
About about everything, but most importantly about love in general. I often admire, and I'm a tad bit envious, because the things that bring them great joy are often small things, and I think we should all learn that lesson. Small
Amen.
Things often bring them great joy.
Yes.
Wow. Well, thank
very
you so much for that.
So much
thank you. Hey,
I thank
so
y'all for having me on very much. I enjoyed it very much.
It's awesome. Have a wonderful time with your family, and Merry Christmas to you, sweetheart, and God bless you, and be safe throughout the holidays, and we'll catch you next time on Solar Records.
I hope so. Thank you so much. You too. Merry Christmas to all of y'all.
Okay.
Happy
Amanda.
Season two.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Caitlin Massey. Thank you so much, and that will conclude this portion of the show. We're going to play a little music for you, and then we'll be done. But Health Talk is very important, and we're so glad that we could do this every Saturday on Solar Records Radio, where we pay attention to our health and our children's health, and, you know, and the world's health. Like, you know, with this pandemic, there's so much stuff going on, and I have a friend that I love him so much, and I just worry that, you know, some people are affected differently than others with the shots and stuff for this pandemic. But, you know, it's like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And so you got to do whatever you have to do that you think is going to protect you and keep you safe. And so I just pray to him all the time. I love him desperately, and I want him to be good with the shot this time, because, you know, we also know that, you know, this new variant is everywhere. It started out, I think, in South Africa, and now it is just spread everywhere. So here we go again, guys. Here we go again. So let's remember to love God, love people, and, you know, love each other and be grateful. And so that's why I enjoy this show, because we get to talk about these kids that just are very special and beautiful in their own way, and we have to know how to love them and not blame everything on them. They are communicating already, like she said. So, all right, guys. So here we go on Solar Records Radio. Let's keep the music going. And thank you again for tuning in. Love you, love you, love you. Oh, it's just good.
We're going to have some fun with this one. Y'all ready? I've been running in circles, jumping the hurdles, getting caught in that rush of doing so much, feeling kind of worn out. All these checking the boxes, trying to be flawless, got me spinning my head, catching my breath, too afraid to slow down. I tell myself to keep this up, got one more, just my love. I've been complicating things, just like me, to overthink. Gotta keep it real simple, keep it real simple. Bring everything right back to ground zero, cause it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. We're living in a world that keeps breaking, but if we wanna find a way to change it, it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. All this is freedom. And this is the kingdom. Knowing life can be found, love can be alive, cause love is what it's all about. Help myself keep this up, God wants more than just my love. No more complicated things, no more need to overthink. Gotta keep it real simple, keep it real simple. Bring everything right back to ground zero, cause it all comes down to this. Love God and love people. We're living in a world that keeps breaking, but if we wanna find a way to change it, it all rescues hearts and changes lives. Love is all we need to make things right. Girl! Oh,
Goodness gracious, we just had this giant explosion outside of thunder and lightning. Oh, my goodness gracious. And all the power went out. But I had this thing connected to my computer that it won't go off with this power. So anyway, we got to keep this music going. And I am, oh, God, I'm so blessed. And that was such a great conversation. And God is good all the time. And yes, that was Dynasty before the new song by Dynasty. I can tell. I'm so excited about what's happening with my group and so blessed. And guys, you know, just kick back and relax and enjoy this music. I want to play a song that just touches my heart so much. I really love it. So here we go on Soul Out Records Radio.
You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. me give my life to you. Let me drown in your laughter. Let me die in your arms. Let me lay down beside you. Let me always be with you. Come, let me love you. Come, love me. Like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses. Come fill me.
I'm sorry, I had to take y'all way back there. That's Dance Radio right there. Man, oh, man. And, hey, I just gave Dance Radio a plug, didn't I? Come on, y'all. Anyhow, this Wardell Paz Jr., and we have lightning and thundering, and it was like it hit so hard. It knocked everything out but my computer. Greg, you'd be so proud of me. I got that device exactly for this reason. And everything went out, but my computer was like standing strong. And so I'm so cool. I'm so grateful. It's like this battery that you plug your computer into, and then you plug the battery pack into the wall. And so the battery pack is fully charged, you know, after, you know, 30 minutes or so being plugged in. And then, you know, then the power goes out. And you know, you're good to go with your computer, because I hate when my computer crashes. It's just like, oh my God. And it could be any, it could tear up stuff. And so you can lose stuff, you lose songs or lose my show or whatever. And so, but anyway, I, you know, so I'm trying to kind of trying to mix up a little bit, because this was Dance Radio, but now it's turned into Health Talk. And so, you know, Solar Wants to Dance is what the title of the show was, but we've been doing the Health Talk thing since October, and it looks like we're going to stay right there, because it truly is something that needs to be talked about, and it really is a blessing. But because of what's happening here, you probably won't hear from me too much more, so we'll just be doing the music a little bit, and then we're going to fade out, because I you know, that was hard. You should, I mean, when it hit, it was like, whoa, I thought we got hit by electricity, and it may have hit. But, you know, fortunately, it didn't hit our bodies, but it may have hit, you know, the building. So, but anyway, God is good. He's faithful. All is good. Thanks to Amanda and Gayla for coming on this morning and being such a blessing. It's morning here, but evening overseas to my friends. And you guys, it is the holidays. This is the weekend before Christmas. So next week going to be Christmas. So have you done your shopping yet? All I want is a giant Jeep. Can you get that for me with the giant tires? Oh, I used to love my Jeep. The Whispers and I, the twins, they got me. They're the ones that got me started with the Jeep. I saw their Jeep. I was like, what? And I got rid of my Trans Am and ran and got me a Jeep. And, man, oh, man, they were fun. You know, they just, as you got older, it was noisy. You know, you get a little sensitive all of a sudden, you know. Things start to change as we get older. It's so weird. We actually start to grow into our parents. Isn't that weird? The people that get on our nerves, we couldn't stand, oh, my God, they don't know what they're talking about. And then all of a sudden, we are them. And our kids are saying that about us or our friends. It's just kind of... that's the way life goes, right? So anyway, I remember when I was this child, and I was just in the world, not having any idea. I was like a puppy, you know, and whatever my parents said we were doing and gave me and to eat and everything. I mean, it was just whatever they were. I was a puppy. I had no idea. All I did know is what I did like. And when I heard those drums up the street, when that guy moved in and this band was in that house up the street playing, I was so excited. So excited. And so I guess we have this hidden treasure that's inside of all of us, including our children that are autistic. They are hidden treasures. They're beautiful. And I just want us to love one of them. They struggle the way that they struggle. But they're human. And they're ours. We are all in this world together. And we need to love on them so that they don't grow up like a vicious animal and just try to destroy someone because they've been mistreated so bad all their lives. You hear these stories about bullies and stuff, and bullies are usually bullies because they feel like that's, you know, their revenge on, you know, people for being so mean to them, you know. And so that's why I say it's important that we love each other, that we love each other right where we are, right where we are, and right where they are, right there. You know, be good. Be kind. Be thoughtful. Be appreciative. Be graceful. You know, I mean, these are the things that you would like for people to, how you would want someone to treat you. Then I think it's really important that we try to do that, even if we don't want it for ourselves. If we hold ourselves at a lower level, we need to love people, period, because God loved us. He loves us. So anyway, as a young man, I was a puppy. I remember after being peeled off of this man's steps, because I wouldn't leave. I was just so excited about this giant drums in his house, and I could see him, and I was just looking at him. Had no idea that they would be in my life for the rest of my life, drums, that is. And I did. I felt it was love at first sight. That is real. My drums, I fell in love at first sight, and I never let them go. That's real. That's real talk. So, all right, guys. So I'm going to close out the show, and I just want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Thank you, Greg, for your amazing flyers, as usual. And I just pray everybody is good and well. And take care of each other. Protect yourselves. And we'll see you tomorrow on the praise show. Oh, yeah, we're going to pray. Oh, we're going to thank God for everything he's done. And so as a little kid, after I got peeled off the steps, my neighbor and family, I was forced to come in the house because it was getting dark. My mom kept calling me and calling me. And, you know, she was calling me by the name of my dad, and I have the same name. His name is Wardell. And so my name is Wardell Jr. So instead of calling me Wardell, my mom called me Waddy, W-A-D-D-I-E, Waddy. And so as she's screaming it up the street, my friends thought she was saying Whitey. So Whitey became my nickname. So I just kept hearing, Whitey, Whitey, your mom's calling you, your mom's calling you. And so I finally got off the step. It was all the way at the very end of the street. And I had fallen in love with the drums. And so I came home, went in the house, whatever my mom told me to do, I did. And then I think we ate, and then I sat down and turned the TV on, and this is what I heard, and it changed my life forever, and I decided this is what I want to do with my life. You guys have a blessed and beautiful weekend. May God be with you and protect you and keep your family safe. In Jesus' name, amen.
like a